Okay, we're in a series called Breathing Space, which is, I need to look over there, don't I? I'm not used to being over here, so I don't know where I'm going. All right, okay, we're looking at that. We're in a series called Breathing Space. Here's what we mean by breathing room. This is a definition of breathing room. The space between your current pace and your limits. And if your current pace is your limit, you have no breathing room. You have no margin in your life. And that leads to stress. Throughout this series, we've been saying life is always better with breathing space. And it is, isn't it? It is a lot better when you've got some margin. Here's a picture that you may remember. Somebody said they thought it was our garage, but it's close. It's okay for your garage to look like that. I understand that. But it's not all right for your life. For your life to look like that. Because you don't know where anything is. When you need something important, you can't find it. I mean, that's what happens in our lives when they're cluttered, aren't they? The important things get lost. We can't find anything. We can't organize ourselves. We feel out of control. And it's okay for your garage to be like that, but not you. So today we're going to talk about money. And whenever we talk about money in churches, people always get a bit paranoid. Here's the good news. I don't want anything from you today. I don't want anything from you. You know, Malcolm's not hanging at the back with, you know, bequest forms and stuff like that, gift aid forms. He's not doing that today. That's not what we're about. I don't want anything from you. I do want something for you. I want something for you today. I want to give you a gift. Last week, we said our time is limited, didn't we? We recognized our time is limited. We live very briefly like flowers in the field that are here and gone. And our time is limited. That means we have to limit what we do with our time. We have to prioritize it. We have to spend it wisely. And money works the same way. But money works the same way. And there is a big difference, isn't there? And here's the difference. Your money is also limited. But in our culture, you don't have to limit what you do with it. And that's because in our culture, although you can't borrow time, you can borrow money. And that's the difference. Even though your money is limited, you can borrow it, unlike your time. And by borrowing too much, we start to lose control of our lives. You can borrow money and you lose control. And life starts to feel, I think, a little bit like this. Life starts to get out of control fast. It feels like we're being dragged around by some unseen force, and it feels a bit scary and a bit dangerous. And when we borrow too much, that's what life starts being like. It stops being enjoyable. It does stop being enjoyable when you lose control of your finances. It's true whether you're a person of faith. It's true whether you have no faith at all this morning. That is true for everybody on the planet. If you're a Christian, however, you need to know something. This is really important. If you're a disciple of Jesus Christ, listen to this. There is a relationship between your ability, your freedom to follow Jesus Christ, and the state of your finances. People don't think that's true. It is absolutely true. There is a link between the state of your finances and your actual ability to follow Jesus. This is a discipleship issue. This is really important. It's why Jesus spent so much time. You read the Bible, he spent more time speaking about your money than he did about hell. He did. He spoke an awful lot about money. Read the parables, there's tons of them. So let's start with this idea. Here's an idea for you. Let's see if you believe this or not. Here you go. Put it up on the screen. Do you believe that? There is a big difference between your standard of living and your quality of life. Do you believe that? Hand up if you believe that's true. There is a difference between your standard of living, your income, what you've got, your spending power, and your quality of life. Hand up if you believe that. I believe that. I don't know if you do. Yeah, okay. You're thinking about it. You're not sure. Can I have both, you're saying? And I think I'd agree with that. Yeah, it'd be nice to have both. But there is a difference between the two. Every day you are bombarded with advertising that tells you that these two things are exactly the same. That's how advertising works. It tells you your quality of life and your standard of living are the same thing. Here's the shock revelation today. That is not true. It is a lie. A lie. The two are different. The two things are very different. If I raise my standard of living, says the advertisers, I will have a better quality of life. Not true. Some of us here may be enjoying, I suspect you are enjoying a higher quality of life or living, probably, not entirely, but probably, than you have, say, 10 years ago. I suspect you are earning more than you did. I suspect you are better off than you were. And that's true for most of us if our income just keeps creeping up. And we're probably enjoying the higher standard of living than we have in our lives. But we find ourselves arguing more. We find ourselves not enjoying life quite as much. We're not as happy as we were. And that's weird because when back then I didn't have as much money, I didn't have as many things, I didn't have as much stuff. So why was I happier when I had less? You see, there is a difference between these two things. There is a difference between standard of living and quality of life. Don't ever confuse the two. Don't ever buy into the myth that they're the same. If there's a God, here's the next question. If there is a God, which of these two things do you think he's more bothered about? Which do you think he cares more about for you? Your quality of life. He's not very worried about your standard. I know that's a bit of a shock, and you wish he was. But he is not worried about your quality, your standard of living. He is very bothered. He really cares about your quality of life. Think about it this way. If you're married, what would you rather have? Would you rather have an awesome marriage or a horrible marriage with a great house and fantastic cars? Which would you rather have? Which would you rather have? Some of you may have experienced this. Some of you may have experimented with this. You may have, had a gorgeous house and cool cars, but you never wanted to go home. You never wanted to drive home in that gorgeous car. Because the relationships and the quality of your life in that place was not very good. You hear the doorbell go, you hear the key in the lock, and you think, I want to leave this gorgeous house. I want to be somewhere else. Because your quality of life is pretty lousy. The two are not the same. Other people start to... Here's a shock statement. And we don't want to hear this because we're Western Christians and we're used to the myth that you just get more and more and more and you accumulate more and more and more and your income goes up and your quality of life goes up and your standard of living goes up all the time, and we're not used to this. But this is the truth. Here's the shock statement. Creating breathing space may lower your standard of living. Oh, we can't do that. That's not an option, is it? Why not? Why not? Especially if it raises your quality of life. And we never consider that as a possibility. We never consider lowering our standard of living in order to improve our quality of life. That really works. But nobody thinks it's an option because we believe norm behavior is I just keep increasing my standard of living. That will lead to quality of life. It doesn't. It doesn't always. It's so countercultural, it's scary, but that's what we're going to talk about today. So I'm going to tell you what I know about everybody in the room, all right? I'm not a mind reader, I just know this is true of all of us. Here we go. Here's the first thing I know about you. Number one, you're living on a percentage of your income. But what I'd really like to bet on, I would put money on this, is that many of you don't know what that percentage is. Many of you are spending, and you don't know how much of your income you're spending every month. You know whether it's 90%, 95%, all of it, less than all of it. You don't know what you're spending. More than you're earning. Some of us don't know that. When I do, hello, you're right there, man. It's a nice car. Nice car. You realise that car won't improve your quality of life, don't you? Do you know that? I just thought I'd mention it. While you're young, get that one. Okay. when I do marriage prep courses, I always encourage them to set a budget. I've always encouraged people to pick a percentage. I've always said, work out what your income is and then live below it. Live below it. A budget is a plan to live below what you earn. Not just marginally, 1%, 0.5%, significantly below what you earn. I always encourage couples to do that. Because if you, here's the point, if you don't pick a figure, if you don't pick a figure, culture and advertising and the shopping mall and Amazon.co.uk will pick it for you. And it will be higher than your income. It will be 110%. That's the figure they'll pick. That's how much you spend, 110%. Which is more than you have. So pick a figure. Most of us don't know how much we're spending every month of our income. We don't know the figure. Yeah, that's what I know about you. Here's the second thing I know about you. We all think, don't we? If I had a little bit more, I'd be okay. If I had a little bit more, it would take the pressure off. If I had a little bit more, my life would be less stressed. If I had a little bit more, I'd be golden. Invariably, we start thinking that when our culture determines the first question, when our culture determines you need to live on or above your income, then we start to think this next thing. That's what we also feel. Here's a third thing, and this is the truth. You felt exactly the same way when you made a lot less. If I had a little bit more, I'd be fine. And now you are earning a little bit more, aren't you? And are you fine? Has it made a difference? You're earning more? Are you less stressed? More comfortable? Do you feel like you've got more margin in your life? Not necessarily. 10 years ago, if someone had told you you'd be earning what you are now and that you'd still be feeling financial pressure, you would have laughed. No, if I earned that, I'd be fine. What if you picked a figure, a percentage lower than your income? What if you worked out what you're spending every month, worked out what you're earning every month, and there was a margin, a gap between the two of them? What if, for instance, here you go, if you like graphs, what if your finances looked like that? What if it looked like that? What if you did that? So that then you could cope with a financial rainy day, because there's a difference between what you earn and what you spend. So that you can enjoy the occasional treat because you're able to save for it and you're not having to borrow it and pay interest, which is giving your money to somebody else and not receiving anything for it. That's what interest is. What if you could live financially with breathing space? What if you could create breathing space between your income and your expenditure? What would that feel like? And if you have that margin, here's what happens. You sleep better. You get along better. And I speak from personal experience on this one. My mum and dad divorced when I was 18. Most of my mum and dad's arguments, and a key factor in their divorce, was that they never did this. The arguments were always about money. The arguments were all about the pressure that they put on themselves. There were other stuff, I know. I'm doing a counselling course. I've got about 25 reasons I know why they divorced. But one of the key ones was this. This put a lot of pressure on their relationships, and they were always arguing about it. So I've been on the receiving end of what happens when people don't do this. If you have that margin, you will sleep better, you will get along better, and I believe you'll be able to follow Christ better. You'll be more generous to the people you love and the people that you don't know. People in Thailand. You can bless other people. That's what happens if you do that, if you live like that, if your finances look like that. You should do whatever it takes legally. I mentioned the word because that's important. You should do whatever it takes legally to make your finances look like that. You should. You should. What if you did that? But most of us don't do that because culture pushes us another way. Most of us, our graph doesn't look like that. Our graph looks like this. That's how most of us live. with our income and our expenditure being exactly the same. What comes in goes out. Let's say you earn £27,000 a year, which is, I think, the national average at the moment, around 27. You're thinking, I wish I had 27. Yeah, all right, okay. But that is the national UK average, I think, somewhere around there. If you earn 27 and you spend 27, do you want to know the result? Financial pressure, because if anything goes wrong at all, you have no margin to deal with it. You're in trouble. If you earn, and here's the point, it's not about the number. If you earn 100,000 a year, most of us are thinking, if I earn 100,000 a year, I wouldn't have any financial pressure. Let me tell you the truth. If you earn 100,000 a year and you spend 100,000 a year, you too will feel pressure. Because you have no margin. In fact, you will probably feel more pressure than the person on 27. You know why? Because £100,000 a year jobs are harder to come by, harder to find, and harder to maintain than £27,000 a year jobs. So if something goes wrong with your income, you've got a bigger problem than the guy who's on 27. It's not about the number. It's about whether your income and your expenditure are running at the same level. Then you've got a problem. Whatever income you're on, it doesn't matter. What's causing the pressure is not the amount. What's causing the pressure is there's no margin. When you live with no financial breathing room, here's what happens. And the Bible is very clear about this. The Bible states you become a slave. That's why, with no financial breathing room, life is worse. You become a slave. You can borrow and borrow and borrow your way into trouble, into slavery. Other people, when you are in debt, other people make decisions for you. They make decisions about where you live or where you can or can't live. They make decisions about what you drive. They can make a decision about what you can buy and what you can't buy. They make a decision about what you give and what you can't give to your friends, to God, to your kids. When you are a slave, when you are in bad debt, you have no choices in certain areas of your life anymore. Other institutions and organizations will make it for you. You are not free. Listen, I used to work for an organization like that. I used to work for Barclays for 7 years. I know they've got a bad rep at the moment, but banks are not bad. Credit cards are not bad. I use mine. I have expenses every month, church expenses, and I put them on it, and I pay it off every month, and it's great, and Tesco's give me points, and I can get Café Rouge vouchers. I like my Tesco credit card, my MasterCard. I use it. I use it quite a bit because I want the points and the freebies. But every month I pay it off. There's never a balance on there. I have no debt. Our family has no debt and hasn't done for 20-odd years. We refuse to take loans. I don't take them. I will not do that. Banks are good. Credit cards are useful. And loans, okay, you know what? They do have a place. My kids are at university, so I know that loans have a place. But when you misuse these things, you become a slave. And here's the point. Here's what you need to know. Reputable financial institutions do not want you to be their slave. It is not in their interests for you to be their slave. And in 2008, a lot of people entered into financial slavery and defaulted on mortgages around the world. And the economy collapsed globally when a ton of people became slaves. The world economy collapsed when that happened. The financial institutions don't want this any more than you do. It's bad business. So why do we choose to live like this? Well, the typical response is this. I didn't. It's the economy. The reason my finances are in a better mess at the moment is the economy. It's the advertisers. It's the economic downturn. It's the banks in 2008. And they did make some stupid mistakes and greed got in the way. Yes, it's Blair, it's Cameron, it's May, pick a prime minister. You know, let's blame somebody else for this. We want to blame some. But be honest, you were living like this, you were living like this before 2008. Most of us were. We were living like this before any other major hiccup in the economy happened or job redundancy or anything like that. We were all living, probably, in the UK like this before all that stuff. So whose fault is it? It's ours. It's our choice to live like that. We chose to live without margin. That's what happened. 2,000 years ago, Jesus predicted this sort of behaviour. And because Jesus is about giving you life and life in all its fullness, he said something about money. He said it about it. In Luke 16, he tells a story. Find Luke 16. He tells a story, which is a really interesting one, about a shrewd manager who gets fired, but uses his position to ensure he has a job later. Now, we're not going to talk about that. It's an interesting parable, that one. But at the end of the parable, Jesus continues talking about money and the influence of money on our lives, the way it can enhance it or cause us problems. And Jesus draws a conclusion. Here is Jesus' conclusion in Luke 16.
I'm sorry to interrupt.
Sorry, yes.
I have Fred Hastings on the phone for Sean.
Oh.
Is Sean here?
No.
He's not.
That's probably why Fred's on the phone looking for him. That's all right, don't worry. Okay, thanks. Okay. It may be Fred looking for a lift here, which is a bit late, really. But there you go. Okay, we'll sort that out. So here's what Jesus said. Here's his conclusion about money. You know this. You've read this dozens of times. No one can serve two masters. Feels like we're on the slavery front again here. No one can serve two masters. You will hate the one and love the other. You'll be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and be enslaved to money. Now, you know what it feels like to have two masters. I bet many of you have experienced this. Have you ever had a job? Have you ever had a job where there were two bosses and the bosses didn't agree? You ever been in that situation where, or somebody thought they were the boss and the other person was the boss? But you've had two masters. So you've worked in a place and you had two masters and they kept telling you to do completely opposite, contradictory things. And when you do it for one, the other one would get annoyed with you and say, why are you doing that? And then you do it for him and the other one would say, no, what are you doing? We've all lived with two masters at some point in some shape or form. Some of you did it maybe in a family. You had a mum who said, this is what we do about this. And you've had a dad who said, oh, no, we're doing that about this. And whoever, you couldn't please them. Whatever you did, you found this tension between trying to meet the demands of two different people in your life. You've lived like this. We've all experienced what it's like. When you've got two people telling you what to do, there's huge tension and pressure, and it's not a nice thing to live under. It's the same with God and with money, says Jesus. It feels like that. God says, here how I want you to treat your family. Here's, say God, how I want you to treat your finances. Here, says God, is how I want you to spend your time. Here's how I want you to prioritize your life. But at some point, we feel torn. God says, and we feel, but I can't. And that's a common experience. I've experienced that and you've experienced that. And sometimes it's our stuff. It's our money that's putting that tension on us. We are torn between devotion to God and our devotion to stuff. And at some point, you have to choose who you're going to please. If you're a disciple of Jesus who has spent and borrowed your way into debt, you will find yourself opening your Bible. This is true. You will find this bit. If you are in serious debt, you will find yourself opening your Bible and saying, I know Jesus says this, but Visa won't let me. I know Jesus wants me to do that, but my Barclays mortgage won't let me. Who's making the decisions now? No. Who's determining the choices now? No. Is it God? Or are you automatically saying to God sometimes, God, I can't because, and there's a financial explanation to it. And sometimes we discover we can't, this is so important, you can't Follow Jesus, even if you want to, because you have made choices that have made you a slave to something or somebody else, usually financial. You discover you have allowed mismanagement of money to keep you from being a devoted follower of Christ. This isn't optional. This isn't just financial advice. This is discipleship. Your money is about your ability to follow Jesus or not. It will stop you doing it. It can stop you doing it. Money can't be your master. This is a big deal. This is about discipleship. You read what he says about generosity. You ever read what Jesus says about generosity? Go home and read it. But then you discover you can't even help your own family because you're maxed out. Because you have no breathing room, no margin in your finances. You read what the Bible says about emotions. You know that famous verse where Jesus says, "Do not worry." Don't you hate that verse? Do not worry. But you know what? A lot of our worries are financial. I know that from being in a family where that happened year in, year out. A lot of our worries, and I can't obey Jesus when he says don't worry because my finances are in a mess that I can do nothing but worry. I can't follow Jesus on that. You read about what he says about relationships. You know, in the Bible, there are all these one another verses. You've seen them? Love one another, share one another's burdens, support one another, serve one another. Can you do the one another? You don't do one another's when your finances are in a mess. You just don't. You're so preoccupied with your own problems and with your own stuff. And you can't support or share one another's burdens because you have no margin to do it. And your finances are a big issue on that. You cannot do the one another's. And there are tons of them in the Bible. You cannot do them if your finances are in a mess. You can't do them. We don't do one another's when our finances are a mess. So what are you going to do? Here you go. Here's what I'm going to tell you to do. Let's close with this. And we're going to close with this. Just a few points. Number one, you have to decide. And that is the first and most important one. The other four things on that list you can ignore, actually. You are all bright people. The problem is not knowing how to do this. The problem is deciding to do it. The problem is not the difficulty of sorting out our finances. Everybody in this room can sort out their finances. The difficulty is the discipline to do it. That's the problem. We lack the discipline. We don't lack the knowledge. It's a bit like exercise. You know about exercise? Exercise works exactly the same way. Does anybody need to tell you how to exercise? Is the problem with getting fit and healthy and looking after your body, is the problem that you don't know how to do it? I'll tell you how to do it. If you want to exercise and get better, you walk briskly down that hill and then back up it. That's really technical, isn't it? You know how to exercise. What's the problem? Self-discipline. The decision to do it. That's always the problem with us. It's not the knowing thing. It's the gap between knowing and doing. It's the decision and the self-discipline. So that is really, number one, is the only step you need this morning. You just need to make a decision that leads to action. Full stop. You can work out how to do it. You don't need me to tell you how to do it. But if you do need me, editor, I'm going to be nice to you. If you do need a bit of advice on how to do it, here's how you do it. So the first thing is decide. Be self-disciplined and do something. The second thing is set a breathing space goal. Decide what percentage you want to live on that is below your income. Work out your income and decide on a percentage. In fact, you don't even have to work out your income. Just think of a figure. 5%, 10% below whatever your income is. Just think of a figure. Don't worry about how. Just name it. Okay, I want to live with 10% margin, 15% margin, whatever it is. Think of a figure. And then for the next 2 months, here's the third thing you do. You spy on your own money. Because most of us don't know what we're spending, and we don't even know what we're spending it on. You get to the end of the month, you go, where did that go? I thought I had more than that. Where's it gone? You should know it's your money. So, 2 months. For 2 months, spy on your own money. You make a note of where it's all going. Internet banking's great for this. You can even set it up and it will categorize. I've got a little pie chart that I set it up on my internet. It's really easy to do. You just allocate different things that you spent on your, and it turns it into a pie chart. It says, Mr. Hughes, you have spent this much on entertainment this month, or this much on groceries, or this much on fuel. And it tells me how much I'm spending on each thing. It's really good. It's really cool. Except you get really weird things that you're spending money on, and then it doesn't fit. But most of it, I know where it's going. You can work that out for yourself. All you do is keep track for 2 months. What you're spending your money on? Where's it going? Here's the phrase. You should be knowing where your money's going. Say that after me. You should be knowing where your money's going. Remember that little mantra. And you need to know. Because if you don't know, you cannot fix it. If you don't know, you can't fix it. So spy on your money for 2 months. Then number four, here's the bit we don't like. Cut and adjust your spending. You could use that, and we gave you a card a couple of weeks ago, didn't we? Breathing space. And there's a plus and a minus on there, and a greater than and a less than. Maybe do that with your finance. What am I going to spend more on because it's important? What am I going to cut out because why am I spending money on that? And it may be, to be honest, the biggest minus there is paying interest on stuff because that's money wasted. It's money given away to other people for nothing. So You need to get rid of your debts, I would say, very strongly. What do I need to spend less on? What are we spending too much on? What do I spend a little bit more on or a little bit less of? What do I need to cut out? What do I need to put in? So use the card, use the same principle, those four things, and work out some sort of spending. Work out what it is. And when you want something, you think, yeah, but that'll breach that margin I've set, that 10% I'm setting between my income. Here's what you need to know. Wanting something is better than owing something. It's fine to want stuff. It's normal to want stuff. It's okay to want stuff. Wanting is okay. Owing is not. Want is good. Owe is bad. Okay? Just know the difference. Don't ever let want turn into owe. If you can help it. And the fifth one, develop a debt retirement plan. And that's really about focusing on your debts. So that's the first thing you want to get rid of on that card. You want to put minus debt. Start paying off your debts. Start getting rid of your debts because that is dragging you down. That is using up your income on nothing. So get rid of debt. There's some great resources about, and there's some great resources in the church. Care for the Family have some books on this. And one of them is about getting out of debt and paying off your debts and how to do it. CAP, Christians Against Poverty, run a money course. And they run them all around the country. You can go on that and you can sort that out. I picked up a name as I was doing some research. And the name Dave Ramsey kept coming up. This guy ran his own business, was earning millions at one point. And he was doing exactly what we've just said don't do. His income and his expenditure were level, and then a financial bump came. He lost it all. He walked away with a shirt on his back and his house, and that was it. Everything else went. Caused his relationships, disastrous relationships because of money problems and debt and all this sort of stuff, and a failed business. And he said, you know what, I'm not doing this anymore. He talks about the spiritual power of money. And he writes books. He's very good. And he tells you how to do it, how to sort out your finances. He is excellent. He's a bit American. So some of the stuff he mentions will be only related to the American financial system. But a lot of it is really good. Particularly, I would say, chapter 8, page 67 of that book. Chapter 8 of that book. Read it. And he does a thing called a debt snowball plan. If you want to go online, look up debt snowball plan. He tells you it is 4 points. It is the simplest thing in the world. It will change your finances. Just do it. Debt snowball. Look it up. And he says, this is how you get out of debt. How do you do it? 4 steps. The order in which you do it. And look that up. It's really, really useful. So there's all sorts of stuff. There are people in this church who know a lot about money and who can guide you. Ivan, you work, don't you? And I know the business you work for is partly concerned with debt management. Yeah, financial education. So Ivan works for is an independent. You're tied in with the businesses, aren't you? So you're not an independent financial advisor, but you're. Don't sell advice. So they do something about debt management. There are other people in here who work in finance and can tell you about this sort of stuff. And use each other, and bless each other. This really matters. Listen, this really matters because this is about your ability to follow Jesus. And it's about what's stopping you doing it. That's part of the reason I don't do loans. I haven't got any loans. I had to go and train to be a minister, and that involved taking out some student loans and stuff. I paid them off. I got rid of them. I had a car loan when I left college. I paid that off within 3 years of leaving college. I got rid of every debt I have. You know what? If Jesus says to me tomorrow, Phil, I want you to go over there and do this. I have no mortgage. That's partly by choice. So if Jesus says to me, Phil, I want you to do this. You know what? There is nothing stopping me. I don't have to say, Jesus, I would love to, but I can't because I've got to pay the mortgage. I don't have to say that to him. I can go where he sends me. I can do what he asks me to do. I have no financial ball and chain. Now, I wish I was as good at doing stuff that Jesus says every time he says me to do it. I don't always. But at least that's not an excuse. At least I haven't got the excuse. This is about following Jesus. This is about the ability to make him the master of your life, not Visa or Barclays or Santander. The chief competitor for your heart, says Jesus. And I find this really interesting. Listen, when Jesus used that phrase in Luke 16, you know what he said? The chief competitor for your heart is not the devil. Jesus said, it's your money. That is the biggest competitor for your devotion. It's not the devil. It's your money. And if you don't believe that, I bet you felt that. I bet you felt torn. Well, I'd love to give, but it's our money. Creating breathing space may lower your standard of living, but it will raise your quality of life. I wonder what you're going to do with that phrase if you really believe that's true. That could change all sorts of things in your life. And Jesus says the two are different. The quality of your life and your standard of living are not the same thing. Change your quality of life by changing your standard of living. You may need to do that. It's challenging stuff. It's great stuff. It's completely countercultural to everything we have been taught and everything that we read in the newspaper and everything that we hear through our advertising. It is completely opposite. That's why this is tough. But I believe it's true. I think there's not a thing we've said this morning that isn't true. And the truth will set you free. Okay, let's close and we're going to sing a song. We're going to say who we want our master to be. We're going to say who is most important to us. And we're going to sing that. Aspirationally, maybe, because we know we have some things, some other masters to get rid of first. We have some debts to pay off, some slavery to buy our way out of. But let's put him first. And I think when you do, your quality of life changes. Your standard of living may go down, but your quality of life won't. So let's stand and let's worship him, shall we?